Hey, here we are. We got some groovy beats to ease us into this week, episode 51, I think, with 52 Skew here. I'm a little sick under the weather, but we made it to the show at my beautiful house. If you're watching live on YouTube, we got live on Twitter Spaces. I'm pretty sure we'll be reading the retweeting those links out in a second here. But yeah, welcome everybody. OSF, you want to get us into the show and talk about the sponsor real quick before we get started?
Yeah, hey everyone. Welcome to Rec Radio episode 51. As you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit. So check out rollbit.com for all your degenerate needs within the crypto space. As usual, we'll have two codes to give away on the show, and then we'll end the show with a little bit of fun today. But the first code is SKEW4927. I appreciate the word skew probably sounds weird in my accent, so hopefully people understood what I was saying there. But
yeah, there skew for anyone who doesn't understand. I don't know if my accent's worse or better, but yeah. So what's up, guys? How we doing? What do we got going on today? I don't know. It feels pretty slow out here. From my eyes, I haven't been doing much. That's for damn sure. I don't know.
51. This is what just struck me. We've nearly done this for a year now. 51 episode. 51. Like that's pretty wild. So is 52 going to be live in Miami? Are we doing it next week all together?
I don't know. Are we? Yeah.
We could. Yeah.
Here.
We're going to have to plan something.
We should have 52 skew on 52K skew on 52.
Let's scoot that up.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would have been
that's very clean, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it is what it is. We'll have to find somebody on the street in Miami to be episode 52.
There you go.
So, yeah, the market's feeling strong. I mean, I think higher than where we were last week. It feels like it's higher every week we do it at the moment.
It's been pretty choppy. I mean, like, we got Skew, the expert, OI analysis people here. I mean, I go to his Twitter page at all times. For anyone who doesn't know, I mean, I would consider Skew the premier. I don't know. Maybe he's humble and doesn't want to take this accolade I'm about to give, but the premier, OI analyzer out there in the Twitter sphere. What would you say your background here is, Skew? How do you get this going when you're trading?
I mean, I think I definitely have a niche for making metrics, especially order flow metrics, to work in Confluence with price action. That's like kind of the key thing in actually utilizing things like OI and delta and volume. All very important because, you know, you put them together, you can see, is, you know, the market net short? Is it net long? People selling spot and hedging, like, you know, little increments, I would say, that become greater signals for where the market can go.
Yeah, I feel like these kind of things are like integral in a market like crypto where there's no real fundamentals to back things up. It's feels like to me, like especially Bitcoin, it's mostly order flow based. Maybe I'm jumping too far ahead here. You guys let me know if I'm jumping topics too quickly, but I kind of wanted to get into, you know, what you use and try to get a little crash course to tell everyone about how you do it as well.
I try to keep it quite simple. I use the word systematic quite often, and I mean that quite literally, right? So I have a system that works, and that would be using 4-hour EMAs. So like the really good 4-hour EMAs are the 21, the 50, and the 200 and 300. You can use the 100, but I just find like typically the 21 and 50 is used by a lot of algorithms. So that gives us enough initiative, I guess, to understand that, you know, algorithms will swap to selling, you know, when the 21 crosses under the 50. And then the same, you know, obviously for a bull cross, yeah, bear and bull cross, people have probably heard about that. Yes, I actually need to like write a thing for that, like a description so I can publish it again, but I can share my screen if you want.
Yeah, let's see.
All right.
For anyone who's not watching, we're live on Twitter Spaces as well. You can see some screen shares. We're going to be doing some technical stuff here.
All right, you should see this now. This is basically what I use. So the blue, that is a one-day EMA.
Okay.
These are the actual settings I use. So I have like auto ones, which is basically for like lower time frames, which is kind of handy for altcoins. But I typically use, if you look at the 4 hour, so the 21, 55, 88, 100, 200, 300.
And what software is this that we're looking at here? Is it TradingView?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to get it out for everybody. Okay, and then it's most, this is most, you do mostly short-term stuff, I would say, yeah?
Yeah, mostly, but I do a lot of higher time frame trades as well. Like, FET, for example, was one I did recently. Like, I mean, this is exactly why I keep it systematic. This, okay, this area was the perfect kind of breakout retest. Yeah, you easily cut through a high time frame level like that, like butter, right? You're going to get a strong impulsive move for the market. But yeah, for like higher time frame stuff, it's usually just systematic trends. So that's using 4 hour, 1 day EMAs, 1 week EMAs, MAs, and use the confluence of momentum indicators like the RSI and the stochastic RSI, or the starch. You can use either.
And what would you put the biggest weight on when you're looking at things like this? I know it's quite biggest, subjective, obviously, but...
To be honest, biggest weight, I would say, is structure. Price structure and price action. So that's where I find my way of trading works really well, right? So I can look at a chart from a high time frame perspective and picture. And then I can go to the lower time frame and use the confluence of order flow. Like, you know, what the market's doing on a lower time frame. Is it strong? Is it weak? Is it trending? Is it choppy? So I actually know like where I want to be positioned, or if I should aim for like an extremity, which would be something like what we had recently on.
So maybe let's break this down a little less advanced. Like, obviously you're using different EMAs, and then you say you're using the RSI. Like, what are you? What would make you go long, for example, in those indicators? Like, what would be a? I know you just mentioned a perfect setup there before, but what exactly are you looking for with those indicators?
To go long, I'd want to see the trend, so the 4 hour and the 1 day EMA is respected, as well as a nice oversold condition in the RSI, as well as you can see the, like, basically when the stotch does that, right, it means momentum to the downside is starting to fade, right? So weaken, and that's where you set up for a really nice bounce. And then the last ingredient would be the type of close you get on the 4 hour, which is really important.
Okay.
The reason being, I'll like talk a little bit more about it, is because people try to front run a lot of bottoms, right? And then they get actually sold into. And that's kind of the risk parameter you want to keep an eye out on. And that would be a solid 4 hour close after. So it like either engulfs the candle completely, like this low over here.
Yep.
Or you see a nice base. And if you go in a low time frame, you can see it made a nice base there.
So the 4 hour is probably the most important time frame on the candle.
Mm. 4 hour and 1 day are quite important.
So just to summarize that slightly, is we're looking at times when things are starting to look oversold and you see it bounce off one of these EMAs. In terms of, like you just said, you can get wrecked doing this because it can kind of sell through. Like, when exactly are you going long out of those candles? On the second candle that it shows stability, or are you waiting for it to get pushed on a little bit higher?
I usually wait till it actually shows real momentum. So that's when it starts to accept value, as in price starts to go back towards the like previous consolidation. That would be this area, right? So you would want to be long into this candle here. As in, you want a long with momentum of the market. Mm-hmm. You don't want a long like crappy momentum like today, for example, like here.
Okay, this makes a lot.
We have a good chance to move, but like this kind of price action, personally, I don't like holding longs in.
Yeah, no real momentum to the upside, just choppy. You know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a game of chicken with like desks or MMs.
Now, a lot of your posts that I find really informative and useful have to deal with using some of that Kingfisher stuff and looking at, you know, open interest and the way the market's positioned. It'd be great. Like, how do you incorporate that and how do you use that when you're taking these positions?
It depends on the situation, like the scenario. So when I use like CVDs and Delta and liquidations, OI, perp delta, spot delta, right? And I can show you that on Velo.
Yeah, let's check it out.
Wait, I hope I don't have to log in.
No.
That's fine. It's a known address. I don't care.
No worries. All right, here we go.
Yeah, this is VeloCharts. This is what I use for OI. I have this like specifically set up to look at OI. And with Bitcoin, you get two options for OI, or typically any coin, any token. So you can have it priced in dollars or coins. And the problem with like doing it in dollars is it's less accurate, like overall, in my opinion, than coins.
Okay.
It's kind of like an old school method. You can use the dollars. I just prefer not to. The reason why is because when I calculate things based off the delta in perps, it's done in coins typically. So you want it to make sense, as in be measured in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So are these stock on VeloCharts, or did you create these yourself? Like, I think it'd just be helpful for the viewer to like be able to break down your exact like way you look at things and try to like right. figure out how they can help themselves in the same way.
Right, right. I think with Velo, it's default. So like how when you have a new trading view account, right, you have a completely blank chart and you have to choose, you know, what indicators you want to add, right? So this is built for my way of trading, and you can have like dual options. So I have Bybit and Binance Futures, since the two most commonly used centralized mm-hmm. exchanges.
And then you add in interest, funding rates.
Yeah, so I have the volume, then I have the open interest for Binance Futures and Bybit. Then I have the funding rate calculated in the 1 hour. It can be useful when you get a market that's trying to short something heavily or long something. The value will be obviously off by... what I mean by that basically is you can tell there's a lot of froth, so a lot of OI opening, which eventually affects the funding into the closing period, which is, you know, where they settle out how much people have to pay, right, for their margin.
Mm.
It can be kind of important for like tops and lows. And then I have the aggregated spot Delta, so this is Coinbase and Binance, and I have it in coins as well, so it's calculated in Bitcoin BTC. And yeah, the reason is it's just cleanly confluent, so you can see long start puking here, right? OI is going low with price, and you can see the delta or sell delta, the amount of selling is increasing, so the amount of sell volume is increasing. So it's a supported sell-off, right, by spot. And what you want to see here, if people are citing ape short, right, that would be OI increasing with sell delta, which is what we had here. I think I tweeted about this.
Always happen away, but
yeah, like this kind of open interest increase with price going down usually is not organic. It's someone trying to push it down, and you can tell with using the.
Yeah, I guess how do you decide whether that's not somebody going long there rather than short? You're saying you have to use another one of those deltas down there?
Yes, I use the delta. So if someone was going long, it would be more green.
Gotcha.
Simply put. So you'd have open interest green and you'd have perp delta green.
So just like with the last one, what would make you take a trade in one of these? Because I think a lot of people look at funding and they look at, but they can also get wrecked. Like, funding's going negative, and then things get absolutely smashed lower and suddenly goes positive again. Like, when are you looking for trades with this sort of setup?
The most important factor is what spot is doing. That's like the most important part. So you can use in Confluence with this, like, heat map technology. So like this site.
Let's get it.
This is free. I just use it so anyone can have like a look, basically. It's easy.
What's the name of the site?
TensorCharts.com.
TensorCharts. This gives you heat maps on spot.
Spot and perps. I mainly use the spot one.
Gotcha. If you want to describe like heat maps for a viewer and how they would break this down, that would be awesome too.
So heat maps is basically the spot order book. So buy and sell limit orders, basically represented in front of you. So like this wall here would be 100 Bitcoins that someone wants to buy. And the catch with order books generally is these orders don't have to get filled. So someone can place, a lot of buy orders, right? Doesn't mean they want it to actually get filled. For example, spoofing, which is basically fake orders put under or above price to force price in a direction they want it to go in.
Yeah, I feel like I've discounted stuff like heat maps just because of how rampant spoofing is in legacy markets and how when I started there. I mean, do you find it reliable in heat maps like this in the crypto markets? Like literally, because you can just use, a platform and enter whatever the fuck orders you want and none of them will ever get hit, and it's kind of meaningless, but you find some use in this?
It depends how you use it. There's a lot of context which can be quite useful. For example, like this high here, we ran and actually filled a considerable amount of supply. And the delta, so the higher the delta, the buy delta, right, means the more takers took, right? Taker means to take liquidity, right? And the liquidity is provided by makers, which is limit orders. Mm. So a lot of these highs are set by a lot of significant limit selling into price. And with that, you get a high buy delta, and that's often the initial signal to fade a move.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously, you can't just fade it blindly, right? This is exactly why. You often get a secondary move, and that's the reaction you want to see. Does the market actually have strength or not? And if it doesn't, then you can easily tag on a short.
So I know ExoCharts does this a little bit, but can you see on this, I guess, how much maker liquidity was filled by takers and whatnot? Or easy way to see this?
You can. So if I go to this candle, you see in the top left, right, it says total volume, 483 Bitcoin. Mm. Buy was 306. So that's 306 bought like at market by takers. And then the takers only sold 177, right? So the delta is basically the difference between the two. And if it's higher than like 100, this is where it gets into like statistical stuff, a bit complicated. But if you have positive enough spot delta and there's no follow through from price, typically you get a mean reversion, which is price goes in the opposite direction or where price originally came from. Which would be, here.
to break that down simply, you would say, I guess, like, if there's a lot more takers and there's not follow through, then it's probably going to be mean reversion, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's definitely very useful stuff, especially when you're trading shorter term breakouts or trying to find a breakout, et cetera.
Yeah, 100%. Most people don't realize this, I think, or materialize it as much, but the reason why price moves, you know, between areas of liquidity is because the takers, right? Someone needs to be the one to push price or take liquidity, right? Mm-hmm. To these areas. And, you know, like, it's exactly like this low here and this high. That's all done by takers.
So what are you seeing, like, right now in the current market structure and with this chop? Are you seeing a lot of takers firing off, but then I guess they just don't have enough liquidity? Like, it seems like the bids are just never really filling in, you know, in the current structure the past week or so. But just curious about your thoughts on it.
Week, generally, I've seen a lot of limit buying, but takers have been consistently sellers, which is interesting. I mean, part of that is the auction theory side, which is you need takers to sell to get your limits filled, right? It's mm-hmm. like the basics of it. But the problem is the momentum side, right? So when you have a really lack, the market really lacks in volume and momentum, that means takers are not really buying. And that's kind of a problem. So it really limits upside. One way to counteract that is what you want to see in like a very strong bull trend is limit chasing. So constant buy orders underneath price, as well as takers buying. That's real market momentum.
Yeah, and that just hasn't happened recently.
It happened here. I tweeted about that, but it has not happened since then. No.
Okay, and do the same exact things work for Ethereum and other alts, or is it just mostly Bitcoin?
Yeah, it works across the board, like on anything really.
Yeah, no, it's great.
That kind of amazing. I would just assume that alts, the order books of these alts can just change so rapidly versus like a Bitcoin or maybe an ETH. But do you still find this useful in like the top 20, 30 coins? Like, or do you think it's, I guess the order book stuff is slightly different than the moving average stuff.
I think moving averages are honestly a lot better in alts, which makes sense. Algorithms use them to enter and exit the market. Liquidity is the biggest issue with most alts. So that is the price difference between like the nearest ask or bid. And that can be considerably high if you don't check order books. I think people should do that because it might save them, you know, a pretty penny, so to speak. But generally, yeah, these kinds of tools and trading methods will work on most alts. I say most, meaning like none on chain. I think on chain's more, probably more based on like whales buying it or whales selling it.
Speaking of whales, you can, with this kind of like technical analysis, you can kind of see when big traders, I mean, we can call them whales, but some of them are just ape like massive size in a Bybit position or a Binance position. Is that kind of stuff still happening? I know it used to happen in the past. I may have been guilty of doing a lot of this. You probably saw my dumbass work on this stuff, actually. But I think it's like a big exploit is being able to kind of like find these taker type whales or apes, we can call them. And in a market like this, when there's no true momentum or trend at certain points during the downtime, when it's just in a channel, they get exploited by players that try to fade them. Can you show us like one of those situations on a chart? And do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know Hyblox is a pretty good tool for that. A lot of people use that based on the liquidation levels.
Yeah,
that generally pretty accurate. I do think there is like a free one on here now, which can help people get kind of started with it. So you get like these liquidation levels. And think.
So the reliquidation map, just to break it down in simplistic terms, you want to run through that too? Might as well.
Like this. A liquidation map is basically just the predicted liquidations of like a 25 or 20x long. Mm-hmm. And that's basically derived by how much OI has increased divided by like the delta, complicated math, right? But more or less, it just tells you where people are going to get liquidated and not like a lot or enough to cause price to move, right? Mm-hmm. And here's an exact example of that. So you had a bunch of longs that were obviously chasing price from here, right? And as soon as price tested that, you had a waterfall sell-off. Not great, because it's not really a lot of longs yet. Yeah, compared to here, there's a bunch of short liquidity.
Interesting. So someone go ahead.
With something like this, you're looking for when it breaks through that level, it's going to dip substantially afterwards, essentially. That's all this shows.
The way to use it, right, is if price tests there, there's a higher probability that price should continue lower, right? So that would mean acceleration in market momentum. You want to see that if you're short. And lower time frame traders can use that to scalp, which is quite nice. You can also use it for assuming certain people have big enough accounts, a lot of money. Like GCR kind of size, they could 100% target these positions in the market. So what they could do is tee up into price, right? And we see that occasionally, which is someone buying at a price, right? But they're also shorting at the same time. And that's where you get a lot of these broken mechanisms, like funding is max negative, right? That's because they're shorting it. But the moment they sell their spot, they actually cover whatever cost they took, as in whatever margin cost they took for shorting it. And then price will go straight back to where it started, or even lower, typically lower.
So it's all just liquidity games, realistically, out here in the crypto markets, for anyone who's listening. That's what it sounds 100%. Like, and exploiting those. I think that's definitely true. Especially when you're sitting in such a low volume channel like we are right now. Have you seen any changes with the way people are like looking at Binance or Bybit, with how like, you know, things are changing on those fronts and regulations and whatnot, and how it's suddenly the CME has more volume than some of these combined?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, not gonna lie. If I go to the open interest here.
Yep.
Yeah, the OI is 4 billion. I think that's all time high, actually, consistently too. But if you go to the actual reports, which I think I can do on here. Yeah, I think it's this one. The most important section really is the dealer. And the reason why is when dealers are consistently more short, right? And the spread increases, so they're shorting it. They have to buy on Coinbase. And that's exactly why you've had a Coinbase premium spiking into a lot of these rallies, is because the dealers have to buy Bitcoin to hedge against the shorts. Yeah, it's
run that back real quick, 1 second. There's something I didn't even think to look at.
Which part?
So you said the dealers, the part about the spreads on the dealers, and then they have to buy it on Coinbase, because that's definitely accurate.
Yeah, basically the premise is the more short a dealer is, the more spot they have to actually, you know, hold. So the more spot they have to buy. So that's why you got like a big Coinbase premium.
So right now the open interest that you see on CME is dealers going short, but I don't know, hedge funds and investment firms going long. Is that what you're basically saying? And then they're having to hedge that delta on Coinbase.
Dealers primarily, but I would assume most asset managers and funds are long.
Okay. So how do you think we're set up now for the next few months? Like, you're opening up your charts right now. sounds like you're opening up TradingView, Velo, one of these heat maps. Like, how do you see the market going in for the next 3 or 4 months, maybe? Or like, how do you think we're set up going into this ETF?
I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and I think at some stage, I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'd assume potentially Q1 sometime. The entire market, as in risk assets as a whole, will see a significant correction. Nothing like COVID, not like, you know, a black swan, but, you know, like a typical reduction of risk across the board. You go into especially January, it's a new year, right? You have new books at a lot of these firms, they take profits on trades and whatnot. So money gets shifted around. And during that, you get a decent sell-off in equities. And I think potentially, at least I wouldn't be surprised to see that on Bitcoin. Generally, the area I'm looking at, like for now at least, would be like 32 to 30 area generally.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the most important high time frame support that we had, at least currently, right? I mean, the next one, no one really wants to test that again, I don't think.
That would be a big liquidity sweep right there. But it would be pretty
I mean, if you see weakness here and you do not close above 31, yeah, 100% you go through all of that. That would be something a lot of people aren't looking at, including myself for now, at least.
Do you think the ETF is a non-event, or do you think it's going to propel it higher? Like people kind of think it. Personally, I think it'd be more of a sell the news type event, but what do I know?
I think a bit of both. A lot of people would probably try to short it, and you would see spot selling, which is to sell the news, right? But I think primarily I wouldn't be like looking at either. I mean, I say this now, you know, given where we are, but you know, if we were here around the ETF, this is a good area to sell personally, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the context we need, is where is price when this comes out? This is the same way we topped on Coinbase, which is what, here? I think it was literally here.
Yeah.
Like, the initial top. So that kind of context is important, where price is, how price trades, how the market trades. Is there a lot of like shitcoins mooning 20 to 50% during this ETF week? Those are like kind of top signals to look out for.
Do you think we're there right now? There's some shit going on like that. There has been.
I think it's different for two reasons.
People were buying like bread heads earlier today in some channels I was in. They're just heads that are breads on Solana or something. So it seems like there's a lot of fault there.
Right. I mean, honestly, like Solana is its own kind of market at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. One of my other buddies just said, you buy Mad Lads, you're just going to make $100,000 per Mad Lad, apparently. I didn't realize. But
that's what even is a Mad Lad?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe one of the NFT guys here, maybe OSF. You know what a Mad Lad is?
Yeah, Mad Lad's
talk about the Mad Lads. Give me a quick pitch before we can talk about Froth with Skew here.
Just a great project on Solana. That's it. Great NFT projects on Solana.
Some kind of like stake in something, and you're going to just get like a future airdrop and be super wealthy? This is not financial advice. I'm not saying that, by the way. I'm like, basically, I don't own any of these fucking things. I'm just trying to
get the He knows nothing about Mad Lads, just to be clear.
Come on.
I just know it's a Solana NFT project and they're building something that you get an airdrop from. Maybe you get an airdrop from.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for that one.
Yeah.
I mean, those have been pretty good players, not going to lie.
No, they definitely have. I mean, people are making money in this kind of stuff right now. But I don't know. Yeah, I guess there's still more upside out here in certain things, it feels like. But I agree that there could be a correction sometime too, especially.
I think everyone's
so goddamn long. But
has it been parabolic though? It feels like it's been kind of.
I don't know. They're up like 35% in the Nasdaq this year. Is that good?
I feel like
caps are like up every day.
I don't think anyone who's going long right now doesn't think that you could have a sweep down. Like, clearly there's a lot of open interest out there in all the major exchanges, but
it's hard to have a sweep down, though. You're right. I mean, it is like a big one. You kind of need a catalyst at this point.
But I also think you could have a sweep up, right? Like the end of these moves would be the most parabolic. So I feel like people are wary of missing something like that. Even though I know this sort of setup, like, I think you're right, and the open interest needs to come down, like, from where it is. It's been building up, and it feels like we need a wipe out of that. But I do think that could go up, then down, then like we do a continuous
trend. And nothing seems like something you'd want to fight at this point, that's for sure. Unless you're just like doing short term scalps based on certain like indicators and whatnot. But
I think you're spot on with the parabolic part. And if we use my chart, for example, I think we are like somewhere here, probably.
You know, yeah. Like
ass chop. And then we get this random, you know, parabolic move. And during this entire move, there was a lot of selling into it. And this is where the market got insanely frothy at the time in 2019.
Mm-hmm. And that could be like that 47,000 area you were talking about was.
Yeah, 47, 48. It could even like go above that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised for an extremity move like that. The market would get insanely bullish then and frothy, and that would probably be a pretty good time to take profit on a lot of the bags, you know, that you bought a lot lower.
Yeah, that's fair. Basically, it's a fool's errand to try to fight it right now, though. I'd have to agree there with everyone saying that.
No, 100%. I think people trying to call absolutes here, at least, are going to get chopped up.
Yep, I'm seeing it a lot. Even people getting long here are getting chopped up, feels like. It's like you really need to be patient and disciplined with your entries since the liquidity is so damn low. I get that, you know,
more holidays. Discipline.
Yeah, discipline. How do you stay disciplined? You just like literally wait for the triggers and that's it?
Yeah, man. Just stay straight toward your confirmations.
Yeah.
You said
you are getting like AP and you know you shouldn't, you know, that's when you need to be patient. That's the patient part.
So can I just go back on that start? You said at the start you're a systematic trader, but it does seem like you give yourself quite a bit of leeway with some of these indicators. Like, do you actually have all those signals and then you go if enough of them hit, or is it purely like out of your control, like when you do these sort of trades? Are you just doing them based on do you actually have a systematic trading, like, I don't know, algorithm which does the trade for you?
For actual algos that do some trading, I have one that does alts for me, simply because I can't be asked to trade like 100 different positions at once, right? Rather have an algo do that. But for what I meant, like the systematic type of trading, that is having these like key confirmations, as in you'd have a list of what needs to happen to enter into a trade. And since typically I'm quite long biased, I typically look for longs in strong uptrends. And that's where you have, you know, high highs, high lows. And you also see 4-hour and 1-day EMA MAs get respected consistently. And then your invalidation is losing the 4-hour EMA trend, which should be price closing below the 200 EMA on the 4-hour. That's like your invalidation for a bull trend.
Okay. So do you see? You have a stop loss there, or you just, that's again, you just have
to, I usually manage the position at the time.
Okay.
So like my risk will change. Obviously the amount of margin I use, the leverage, will change the amount of risk it takes. So like higher leverage, obviously less equity amount, lower leverage, higher positions, and lower leverage would be more high time frame trades. That would be where I know price is holding a high time frame level. That's where I would take on a more of like a swing trade, lower leverage. But if I'm scalping, I'm using higher leverage.
Yeah, it makes sense. Kind of how I do it.
Yeah.
What What else do we have here? Speaking of, so you don't really short. Well, you do short, like, or do you short? Sorry.
When I short, I look for the price rejecting supply areas. That would be this, exactly this kind of price.
Yeah, kind of upsweeps where the taker fails, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, those are really profitable spots.
So does that mean
No,
I was just going to go into, so in terms of your trading style then, your losses are generally kept to a minimum? Like, how big are you going in terms of these trades as a percentage of your portfolio? Like, what R's, like, multiple are you looking for each trade? Like, how do you think about these trades? Do you think about it in terms of like that, or is it just purely based on the setup and you just let it run? Like, where would you even look to exit, something like that?
I'm a little bit weird on this. I don't use the cliche like RR thing. I know it's really effective and great for risk management. My trading's typically price action. So that would be the setup at the time. Is it respected by trend? Do I have order flow signals as well? That would determine if I take on a lot more risk than I usually do. And I usually risk like 5 to 10%. Like of that portfolio, you know, not including spot and all that, just my derivatives account. If it's a trade that has every single confirmation, I would bet like 25% plus. That's considered more degenerate. And then for my exit, I usually exit into these strong moves because I need the liquidity.
Okay, so you'll let them ride for a while.
I would exit. Wait, sorry, repeat that.
I said you'll let them ride for a while. Like you're not just there for a scalp when you go into these trades.
The high time frame ones, yeah. Scalp, I use a lot lower equity amount. So that would be like 1 or 2% the account, but it would be much higher leverage, so I can borrow a lot more and make a lot more. That makes sense. Like I can risk 2% and make 10% kind of thing. 20x basically.
I mean, being a systematic trader, have you ever found yourself in some degenerate spots where you kind of went against your system and it got out of line and, you know, you're taking a massive loss? Or are you pretty good at that?
Honestly, I don't think I've taken...
We want to hear about some more stories too, if you have any.
I don't think I've taken a loss in like ages. I can show you where I did.
Yeah, let's see a quick loss.
Actually, I think it might have been here. Yeah, I think I had like long orders here, which I forgot that were there. And then obviously FTX crash happened. I held that and then obviously sold it for like minimal profit here. That was one of them. I think the other one was being short here, and then I had two close stops. And I obviously cut the position considerably lower here, and then obviously get the nuke. It's like the moral of the story is, if you know the overall market trend, right, and you have conviction, don't really second doubt yourself. Just have better risk management principles. And that would be have better execution. So like, don't get positioned in the middle of ranges. That's how you get wrecked.
Okay. So where you failed on both of those trades is basically leaving yourself with unfortunate order, and then your stop was too close, essentially.
Basically just crappy execution. So I would ignore the fact that it was mid-range, which is big no-no. You don't really take trades in the middle of a range if it's not, you know, like a confluence to break the range, right? And if you don't have that break, then you cut the position instantly. So, for example, like this range, if I was short here and in the mid-range, right? The fact it did not break down here and it goes against you, you should cut your short there. And then the same for along, you know, if you're along from here and you add here and then it does not break above this high. In fact, rejects, you'd want to cut in this candle, like these considerable down candles, which proves trend is still down. So trend is friend, right? A lot of people have heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the important context overall every single time.
I like that. Trend is a friend is a good mantra that people should probably follow, especially since everything just goes up right now and fighting it is a fool's errand.
You don't seem like a good guest for Rec Radio, man. You don't lose money, it seems like. You said,
yeah, what the hell?
Like you only have winning trades? Is
or P&L up only for 52 skill. Yeah.
Even on the
I can actually like I can show Mikey after this. It actually is like kind of up on that. Kind of.
I mean, I guess that just shows that Bitcoin and crypto in general really is just so liquidity based that if you're honed in on these specific indicators, the ones that SKU gave us, I mean, if you're using Velo charts, the open interest with Tensor charts and iBlock mixed in, these are all good bases for a nice foundation to really like, if you have some discipline, you can build a bankroll with this kind of strategy. Would you say that's true? Can.
You definitely can if you're a good like lower time frame trader. Otherwise, yeah. Personally, I would learn how to use EMAs and MAs. Just makes trend really cleanly represented on a chart. That's why I use it.
And a couple
most importantly, the structure and levels. So high time frame levels, you need to really understand and know how to trade them. So like rejections and obviously flipping it as support, right?
Yep. And I guess like speaking about short-term trading in this style, have you found that it's tough to like get liquidity? Do you keep your size pretty small as like sometimes a bigger trader? I mean, it's kind of difficult to play these kind of short-term trades in this market, especially with any sort of size. So are you taking more like singles and doubles rather than home runs?
Honestly, it's always momentum based for me. So if there's not the momentum I like or that I want to see, you know, for the kind of risk I take, I cut the position in half.
So makes sense.
That would be, I know the trade can play out statistically for like, you know, 80 to 90%, which is sufficient enough, right? The fact it is not showing the momentum I need like today, I would cut my risk considerably.
And that's how you stay winning, pretty much. You stay disciplined.
Yeah, you just want to reduce the amount of loss you can take.
Exactly, man. Well, this is a fun episode. We're coming to the closing questions here. I mean, it was more technical than our usual stuff, which is great. There's some good diversity in here. Get people using their brains for once instead of just sitting there idly listening to OSF talk the whole time. With that, we got the closing questions here. And then we're going to do some Robic giveaways. You can stick around. You can bounce whatever you want to do. But the first question we got for you is, how do we not get wrecked? That's what we ask everyone. I think you gave some good examples already, but love to hear you opine on that.
Don't ape without a plan, basically. You can ape. I'm not saying can't ape. You just need to ape with a plan. That's basically it.
I like that. You do need a plan when you ape. A lot of people just ape these spots and then they're going to show up as the taker on SKU's chart and he's going to fade you right back down. And that's not what you want. You don't want to be that guy taken and see the bid support just disappear. And then we had some viewer questions. I don't know. They want to know when the Rec Radio Poker Tournament is. I don't know. We don't have one. What's everyone's thoughts on CZ stepping down on CEO? Does it matter at all? SKU, anyone? Does anyone have an opinion on that?
It was kind of expected. No? Like, yeah,
I agree. Is he going to go to jail now that he's trapped here in the U.S.?
Yeah, they're going to definitely try to convict him on some stuff, no doubt. You know, they kind of have him by the balls, so to speak. So like, right? They can inflict pain.
Tricked into coming here. I don't know.
Potentially.
Yeah, it seems so. And then people want to know who's OSF fighting next at Crypto Fight Night. And you should be the one dueling in the arena today, OSF.
I'm retired.
Are you calling out? You're retiring?
Yeah, I think retirement is on the cards there.
Oh, man. How was that, OSF? We didn't get to talk about that in the beginning of the show. I kind of just jumped right into the technicals. Why don't we get some from OSF on the fight?
It was good. It was tough. It was much harder. He was better than I thought he was, so it took a lot out of me.
He didn't just reach on you. You really had to get in there. Like before the fight, I was like, God damn, OSF has a foot in height and 8 inches in reach. I was like, this is fucking GG. I don't even know who set this fight up. And then you were just in there. You got inside.
Yeah, and that was the only thing I could do. I had a calf injury as well, so I just had to get close, get toe-to-toe, just throw as many punches as I could, and that's what I did. We got the win. So
were you gassed?
Yeah, I was gassed by the end of it. To be honest with that, I was fit enough to fight because I trained hard, but he caught me with a strong shot, which kind of took the wind out of me. So